As we walk this journey called life, we seek to find those things that bring joy to our existence. We want to embrace love, desire, and passion through healthy human connections. We want and need to discover meaning to the steps we take daily. The challenges of breaking barriers stir up our spirit as we prove our individual importance. The value of life is precious as we assist others to discover their way. The legacy of our being is found in the donations we make in those outside of ourselves. Success in this journey takes focus and commitment to winning. The victory is in not allowing fractured beliefs of the masses to impact the rules we have made work for ourselves. This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. We come to you 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and Sunday at 8:30 Eastern Time. We have a platform for your voice to be heard loud and clear and unfiltered. It is time that we speak for ourselves so that others completely understand the direction we want our country to go in. No longer can we sit on the sidelines and allow others to select our direction. It is time for people of color to use the internet to make sure their voices are heard beyond a couple of streets. Our thoughts and needs and desires need to be heard around the world. And Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is that platform that you can be assured that your thoughts and feelings will be respected and heard without challenge. It is time for us to come together and make sure that we're not left behind. This is your host, James T. Deshay, looking forward to have you call in to the show at 657-383-0309. 7 days a week, we want to be heard loud and clear.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1. And it's 24-7, the world's best radio station.
It ain't no different when the king goes sick. Fuck around and get quick.
This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, we are dealing with a lot of issues, and we have to sometimes return back to some issues in order to continue to try to hammer out some solutions. And today is no different. We have to return back to a situation so that we talk about and length, how do we decide as a society how we are going to be policed? And what I mean by that, are we going to allow police officers to run shotgun over us, or are we going to demand that they have some type of professionalism? You know, we as professionals go to work every day knowing that if we don't act in a professional manner, we may very well lose our job. So why can't we demand that same kind of respect and appreciation from police officers when they interact with the general public? I read a story today where they're still dealing with the arrest of a white nurse by a white police officer because she was following the hospital policy. Now the policy of the hospital is changed such that nurses will no longer be allowed to interact with police officers so as to make sure the administration conveys the policy of the hospital and not allow them to arrest or interact with nurses. The problem with that is that we in the general public don't have a filter. We don't have someone to intercede for us or to keep police officers from unjustly arresting or harassing us as citizens. And we would think that the police chief and the administrators of the police department would convey to their police officers how to treat the general public until you find a reason that someone in the general public needs to be detained. So we just want to talk about today, how are we going to continue to move forward in this environment where we naturally see that police officers are violating our civil rights. Tyrone, what are your thoughts about how presently it looks as though the rights of citizens are being violated in an outlandish way related to the police?
Well, good evening. And again, thank you for inviting me to the show to participate. You said the key word, white female. So with a white female being abused, and we got cameras, everything is being exposed, people are, they're in an uproar because it's happened to a white female. But this kind of stuff happens to us all day long, 24/7. And so I promise you this hospital, along with this female, is going to get an apology. They're going to win a lawsuit. And they're going to take serious, serious action. It makes me also think about this officer who stopped this this white woman, and she was fumbling and probably was on drugs. And he said to her, "Don't worry about it. We only kill black people. Today, all evil is being exposed, and we're going to see things that we've never seen, never heard. But it's that time for white folks, police department, and whoever else have." Patronized our people and who've done all kinds of evil things and taken advantage of us, they're going to be exposed. And that's what's happening today. They're being exposed, and we're going to see things that we never thought we would see, the kind of things that they do to us. I'll shut up at this point and let somebody else talk.
Well, Tyrone, I just believe that the citizens of America have the right to dictate to the police departments across the nation how we are going to be policed. They do not have the right to make policies through the city and through the police department about how they're going to handle us. And so if we need to fire if we need to fire mayors and we need to fire police chiefs in order to send a message to those down at the patrol area, then that's what we need to do, because it is just unacceptable for them to be going around arresting people in the general public. You know, when it's one thing to go after someone who's murdered someone, or go after somebody who is a robber, or go after somebody who is a, you know, carjacker and treat them inappropriate. It's a total another thing when you decide that the general public is at your mercy. So my thought is that we need to be dictating how we want to be treated to them and not let them decide how they're going to treat us.
Well, when you become a police officer, what comes with that is power, artificial power. When you represent the police department, you have the whole city behind you, you have the whole state behind you, and so you get to the point where you believe that you're God, and nobody could affect you, and you can just do what you want to do, because if you saw the way he arrested her. He had so much anger. He was so angry. The woman didn't do anything. She just said she couldn't do that. She couldn't divulge that information. She couldn't whatever was going on. But he was so angry. The anger was not even about this lady. It was about something else going on in his life, or the fact that he has this superficial power. And those people, I think about when I was a kid. I came up in New Orleans, and as a young kid coming up, young poor kid coming up in New Orleans, man, we went through all kinds of things. I could tell you some stories, make hair stand up on your neck. But I remember as a kid, I was on my way to Boy Scout meeting. It was on a Saturday afternoon, about 2 or 3 o'clock. And as I'm walking to the Boy Scout meeting, the police are rounding up all the black kids and all the black men, all the black males and black men. They had me on my knees with handcuffs on me. And I was like probably about 12, 13 years old. Someone had gone into – it was during the parade season, and they were getting prepared for parade that night. And somebody had gone into – somebody had thrown a rock or something on the parade, on the float. And this was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so parade was not going to roll until 5:30, 6 o'clock that evening. But somebody had thrown a rock on the float. They rounded up all the black men that they can see. It was going into stores pulling black men out and black boys. They had me on my knees. Handcuffed. I was about 13 or 14 years old, I think. About 13. And if it wasn't for my Boy Scout master, who there was a gentleman who was handcuffed on the floor, on the ground with me, and he was crying, and I mean he was just out of control, and he was trying to tell the police officer that we were on our way to Boy Scout meeting and we had nothing to do with that. So he told the police officer. Uncuffed him, told him to go get the Boy Scout master. The Boy Scout master came down where we were with a whole bunch of men and young boys and identified his Boy Scouts. And I think he also identified some people who were not his Boy Scouts. But other than that, I was going to jail. And I was just innocently, because at that time we could walk 3, 4, 5 miles with no problem. And I was just an innocent kid, was getting ready to go to jail. So the police, I have a bitterness towards police, and I'm sure if you listen to me, you would know that. Just like I have bitterness towards a lot of white people because of experience, and I don't walk around hating white people. I just know that the things that they've done, and I know that the fact that they've touched the wrong person with this white woman, because this white woman represents this hospital who has power, and so there are going to be all kinds of things exposed, going to expose the evil in this world, and we're gonna see things that, listen, just stay tuned. We in for a fight. It's gonna be a revolution.
Dee, I'm coming to you today and ask you, if we don't have a administrative or, you know, the hospital has decided that they're no longer going to allow their nurses to interact with police officers, that the administration will be the filter between the police officers and their nurses. We, as the general public, we don't have anybody to enter to run interference for us. So we need to figure out how we can dictate policy to the police department. You know, the police department went to the hospital and they came to an understanding of how they were going to be policed. Why is it that the general public can't demand or negotiate with departments about how we're going to be policed and how we're going to be interact with police officers?
Well, good evening, everybody, and I've been gone for a minute, and nice to be back on the show. Well, James, you know, that is a hard question for me to answer. One reason is because, you know, I think now is the beginning of a new era. And you know, I remember right before Donald Trump was elected president, and we were already going through Ferguson and Baltimore and all those issues. And I would hear people say that we're going back. They're trying to send us back into time, back to a time of 1965. And I really didn't want to believe that. I didn't want to believe in America in 2017, after we were fortunate enough to have our first black president, that we were going to be able to be reverted back into time, and back into a time that Mr. Tyrone just spoke about. But it seems though that we are in that era now. So to answer that question, how can we prevent, or how can we instigate or try to put into action the way things should, the way that we should be treated as civil human beings, and the way that we should go about making sure that they treat us in a civil manner. I'm not sure. It is from where I stand and from where I sit and from where I observe. There's so much going on right now, so fast, with North Korea being on the hot plate. It's hard to say where and how we're going to get back to the standard of living and the civil attitude being portrayed upon us that we were once used to. So I'm going to have to pass on that question, James. Thank you.
One of the things that I learned working at the police department is that, well, I didn't work at the police department, I'm sorry, let me regress. I worked at the jail teaching inmates and helping them get their GED. But there's a lot of false information that the police department and patrol give to the general public. And see, depending on who they're talking to, they make them believe that they have the right to do certain things. And so one of the things that I would have arguments with my with the inmates about was, the inmates were under the impression that you always had to carry ID. And I said, there is no law that makes it mandatory that you carry ID. I said that when you drive a car, yes, you have to have a driver's license to show that you have the right to drive a car. But if I want to walk around my neighborhood or walk around anywhere in Orlando, I'm not required to have ID because I'm walking or because I'm in the general public. But somehow or another, I guess because so many African Americans are being harassed when they're in the general public, they're under the impression that there's some law that requires them to show or have ID when they're walking around in the general public. Now, I understand that police officers have a need to, if they're investigating something, to know who you are, and it might be in your best interest to be able to prove who you are, but there is no law that requires that. And the other thing that I'm concerned about is that there seem to be too many people who get arrested who are in the car with a driver who does something inappropriately, and then the passenger is being harassed and asked for his ID. I just don't understand or know any reason why a passenger would be required to show ID for a traffic stop or any other crime that may have been committed by a driver. Andre, what are your thoughts in terms of us as citizens having some way of dictating or mandating how we want to be treated as citizens?
Well, terrific Tuesday to everyone. And let me go back before I answer that question, James, to the conversation as it relates to you had asked Dee the question about, long day. What it was about how can we impact in our communities or having a liaison or ambassador or something. Well, my response to that would be, first of all, we have to be viewed as valuable. The police officers went to discuss how nurses will communicate with them in the future because they view them as valuable. And so how we become valuable is making sure that we're participating in our local communities, our elections, of course, our police advisory boards, whatever committees that we have, and be actually active. And then our voices do become valuable. And then, like you say, they do respond in a different way of how they give information. Now, as it relates to why people may feel that they have to have identification on them when they're not driving a vehicle, it may be because of the fact that in reality, as blacks, we want to know in case something happens to you, we need to be able to identify you. It's not so much as far as helping the police to understand who you are, because with or without identification, in some cases, some police officers will not adequately use their position. But I know coming up from Mississippi, we had ours in case something happens. We want to make sure that we were properly identified and our parents are notified. And, I mean, that may be ugly, and I hate to admit it, but it's a true fact. As black, we have to understand we have certain things that this society has required us to do. I'm not saying that it's fair, but it is a way of life and reality. So that's my response to the question.
Well, I understand the fact that you may want to have ID in case something happens to you, but the truth is that no ID is required just for you just walking the streets. You got to know that there are a lot of homeless people who don't have ID, and you can't just use that as a premise to arrest them. But they do use it as a premise to harass young men who may not want to let them know who they are. And so it is to their interest to let them think that it's a law that requires them to have ID.
And even if they don't think it's the law, going with the scenario you just stated there, we understand if that's the game, if that's what they're going to play, right or wrong, it may not be the law, but more important than the law, we are in survival mode. As black people, we're in survival. You can talk all this talk if you want to about what's legal and what's not. We're in survival mode. So you take the necessary to make sure, hey, I'm just telling you.
Joyce, let me ask you, because, you know, sometimes when I'm watching some of these videos, I get very upset at what I see as police officers overstepping their boundaries. Now, I can understand you pulling over a driver for speeding and you are requiring him to produce his driver's license and his registration and his insurance. But how can you tell me that you have the right to demand the driver's license or ID of somebody who is a passenger? that person may very well just be getting a ride and has nothing to do with what the situation is related to the car and to that driver.
That could be true. But my thing is, well, I think what Audrey and what Dee and what we all trying to say is that the law doesn't apply. You know, there's different laws. And like she said, we're in survival mode. So what if I would want you to know who I am if I'm that passenger, and if you just caught it, and if you ask me for my ID. I don't want to put myself in no situation where it's going to cause a negative type of environment. You see, to me, you be triggering something different than what it is that, you know, you got to play outsmart them psychologically. You see, that's a form of harassment, but you treat a person opposite of what it is that they're, where they're going. So you got to have foresight. And in order to have foresight, it will save your life in a lot of situations. You know, why be in a militant saying that? Why do you need my ID? Hell, I don't care. You the law. Okay, you want to see my ID? Here we go. Because you got to play into a survival mode, just like she said. So, no, it doesn't apply. What you're saying is what the law is. The law does not apply to certain people, and we are those certain people. So in order for us to be able to survive, we're going to have to outsmart the system more or less. And that's teaching our kids how to react, you know, how to react. Or if you're going to ask us, so officer, do you mind that I ask you the reason why you're asking me for my license, for my ID? You know what I mean? So it's a way of getting around that. And then from what comes out of his mouth would dictate to you how you would go forward with communicating with that officer. Like she said, we're definitely in survival mode, and we got to teach our young people that this is where we are in life now. Thank you.
Tyrone, if we never show that we are upset, are not appreciative of being treated differently, how can we ever dictate that the policies be changed if we're going to always be in compliance?
Well, I think what you're saying is that they're supposed to be able to treat us just like they treat white folks and any other nationality.
Right.
And that's not happening. You know, I lived in a community several times where it was all white folks. And the way we see police officers in the black community, we see them as danger or dangerous. In the white community, we see him as officer friendly, or her as officer friendly. And that's because they have misused their abuse of power, and they take advantage of that statement that was made to that white woman on the highway when the police officer said, "We kill black people." That was serious. We don't kill white people. We kill black people. Also, there's a big difference even with the African-American male and female. Women are not treated like black men. Black men are treated they're like a threat. It's a threat. We are a threat to them. So when they stop you, you are a threat. They're dealing with you like you're a threat, like you're going to harm them. For the most part, when they stop a black woman, they're not going to treat her like the way they treat us. I know I lived in a certain community at one time, and if you came in that community, if you were white, you would not be stopped. But if you were black, and in particular a male, you were going to be stopped. I don't care what happened, you were going to be stopped. You didn't have to break a law. They were just going to stop you from driving being black. I recall one night I was leaving my house, and they stopped me one night because I had a little light bulb or something blown out around my license plate, and so he stopped me for that. I also can remember being with this white female one time. I think we had driven somewhere together, and we were on our way back to this particular place or whatever. And when that police officer stopped her, I mean, she just went off on that police officer. She just went off, and the police, you know, he was like submissive. He was trying to apologize to her and trying to explain to her why he stopped, but she went off on him. Now, if I had gone off, or even a black woman had gone off, that could have been in our lives. Now, to get back, we still have to get our people elected in certain positions. We have to get laws changed. We have to take advantage of voting and a bunch of other things to change this thing. But these police departments, they have to be revamped because they're just doing what they want. And I'm gonna say this, and God knows I shouldn't say it, but the way they're killing out our black men and black women, you know, we may have to get to the point every time they kill one of us, we kill two or three of them. I know that's not right, but I promise you, stop killing us, because they're no better than us, whether police or whether it's white folks or any other nationality. We got to get to the point we are just as valuable as anybody else. And they don't do that to anybody else. They don't do that to any other nationality. They don't normally do that to a white woman. It's just that this nut probably was upset about his wife or something. I don't know. But he just lost it. But everything and everybody's going to be exposed. So we're going to start seeing more and more and more of this. I'm going to shut up and let some other people speak.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and continue our conversation.
I will be the one to hold you. I will be the one.
Are you prepared to shake away your fear of being rich and successful? You must discover ways to accumulate wealth without adding more work to your day. The Wealth Dad system adds more value to your hours by creating an opportunity to multiply your efforts. Visit WealthDadSystem.com. If you want more information, call 407-459-4827. This is an opportunity to change your quality of life and increase your monthly cash flow. This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, I truly believe that more than 80% of police officers are out there just trying to do their jobs. But the ones that truly need policies and to be governed are the 20%. And 20% is too large a number for us to be at the mercy of these people who don't know how to control themselves. And so at some point in time, we have to amass ourselves in a way that makes us be able to dictate and mandate that police officers follow some rules. It was a policy that you cannot use a chokehold when Gardner was killed in New York City. So if you're going to have a policy that says that you are not allowed to use a chokehold, and then you use one, how in the world can we see it as being lawful when the person is not prosecuted? So obviously, the administrators or the lawmakers recognize a law should be enacted, but if they're not going to follow the law after it is broken, it doesn't make a difference.
Well, James, I need to reiterate where I was trying to go with my statement. And Ms. Audrey and Ms. Joyce explained it better to give me a better groundwork to explain my point. All right, listen. When Ms. Audrey and Ms. Joyce mentioned the fact that we first of all have to establish that we are valuable. All right. Let's turn back the pages of history, of black history, to the years of 1963, 64, and 65. Again, that was the point that Dr. King and his movement had to first establish that we were somebody. Remember the posters that they had that you when you go look at the books and the pictures and all. Remember the posters, I am a man? They were trying to establish what? That they were somebody. They were trying to establish their value in society. Hence my point. This is where we are one more time. And the mindset, see, now here's the mindset. This is what's going on. You know that they got the DACA law trying to implement any which way they can to stop all Hispanic people and stopping them for any reason, going to the movie, just stopping them, right? And making them show ID to see if they're legally here. And they, if they can find any reason to stop them, like Sheriff Arpaio, which the one that the president had pardoned. That was what he was doing in Texas, stopping Hispanic people for any reason, no reason, just to check their ID. This is the same mentality now that they want to portray upon us. Now, what that is, that's the nationalist ideology that put Trump in the White House in the first place with Breitbart and Steve Bannon. Those were the people that came together on these back websites that we know so very little about, that had been started way before Trump became president, That's why you see it in so in full force. It's all about the documentation. If they can find any way to put us in jail, hopefully that you got back child support. Hopefully that you're not doing what you're supposed to have done and you hadn't paid a ticket. So they can take the passenger ID to see if they got anything pending on him. Then they do what? Put his butt in jail. That's they trying to clear up the street. The nationalism idea. Nobody but us. Jews and nobody else will replace us. That's their ideology. So that's what we're looking at. And as far-fetched as that sound, as hard as that is to visualize, in 2017, that's where we are, and that's what we're having to deal with. Thank you.
Andre, I understand the need for us to be safe, but I recognize that if we don't ever try to alter the system by doing something that shows that we're upset, then we'll forever be treated as second-class citizens. This nurse who defied the police officer was arrested, but ultimately because she was arrested, the policies have changed and that this will not occur again. So what is it that we need to do in order to make these policy changes where they won't be able to harass us and treat us differently than they treat their white counterparts?
I go back to what my response was before. Our participation locally in the elections on these police citizen advisory boards, the community within our and all communities have different committees and forums that we participate in, because it's not like we haven't been arrested before. So obviously all being arrested and a change occurring, it haven't worked so far. So you're right, we have to do something differently, yes. But the answer is not defying or agitating. Joy said it very well. She articulated very well, better than I did. We have to strategically think, and, you know, a lot of people throw that word around, but strategic is just a simple way of just planning with a purpose. That's all it means. You're planning with a purpose. So sometimes you have to, part of your plan may be that the person thinks they're in control, and in reality, they're acting just the way or responding in the manner in which you have already anticipated or you're planning for. So our plan, to answer your question, is we have to unite. I mean, we say this all the time, how important it is for us to unite. We have to be active. We have to take action. And then we will be heard. That's how we demand stuff, because, you know, as we call and provide requirements of our senators and representatives by the number in which Joyce used, that's action. But again, we continue to keep following up, you know, not on just one incident or another. All of a sudden they're going to want to know, well, who is this Andre? Who is this person? Who is that person? And that kind of stuff like that. And then, like you said, the response that they give you is different. Have you ever been in a situation in which a person told you, even to your face, because I have, you know, you don't act like everybody else. What do you mean I don't act like everybody else? How do you expect for me to act? Or they come up, you know, you dress so nicely. You're so professional. What does that mean? Do you anticipate other people not being professional? So, you know, to answer your question, James, that's how we have to. That's part of what we have to do.
And Andre, that's part of the problem, is because they use the stereotypes that they see on television to dictate their thoughts of what majority of us behave like. And see, when they, you know, I've heard it, and I'm sure everybody on the show has heard it, put to them in that way. And that's only because those few people have only interacted with a few people to know that there are many of us who know how to be professional. I'm around professional, all of us are around professional African Americans all the time. I can tell you that I don't spend a lot of time around uneducated rednecks, so I don't know how they behave because I don't spend any time around them. And so when they make those statements, a lot of times it's because they haven't sought to be around professional African-Americans who know how to interact themselves accordingly. And when we are in our comfort zone, yeah, we may revert back to slang and all those other things, but that's not how we behave in the general public. Joyce, would you think that is correct? And so many of them expect us to behave like some of the individuals they see on TV, and then that stereotype impacts how the general African American is treated.
And that's why you have to use a psychological approach to that. You're around more rednecks than you think you are. Believe me. You definitely are. When you deal, you know, your question earlier was, you know, well, how would you want that person to deal over in the passenger seat? You want them to do exactly what they think that you was going to do, cut up, challenge them, the whole bit. But you got to outsmart that situation. Well, sir, may I ask you a question, officer? And like I told you, it is how you ask that question, what come out of his mouth would dictate to you who you dealing with. You got to always know who you're dealing with, per se. That's what survival mode is. What can we do? You go along with the program, but and that's what you do. You try to survive. And no sooner than you leave that officer or drive away safely, then you go into recovery action mode. But if you're going to try to challenge somebody with a gun and with a badge that has the privilege, who's going to lie, and they always going to believe the officer because he wearing the blue over you, it's not going to work that way. We've been doing that for too long, so we're going to have to do a different approach. And that different approach is, like Dee said, always be in a position where you can walk away safely and then react, do your action and change the rules and change the laws. But you trying to do it in front of the situation that's taking place in front of you, you will not survive it. That's not how it's going to work in this United States of America today.
Well, Tyrone, you said to me yesterday that the movement is going to be created and these young people are not going to tolerate being treated differently. How are we going to mandate? You and I both know that we all have the right to carry weapons. But when you walk down the street in public with a rifle and you're a black man, you're going to get thrown to the ground and your rifle is going to be taken. If you're white, you might be able to argue why you have the right to carry your weapon and they may let you go ahead on your business. But that does not make it right. And so if we agree to accept that as fact, means that we agree to be treated as second-class citizens.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's just like one time we were not able to vote. But we had to continue to fight and continue to fight and petition courts and to be able to vote and also to lay our lives down. But I think another thing is that what we're dealing here, we're not dealing with just educated people or people really knowing what to do. Most of the people that the police take advantage of is poor people, poor and uneducated people, and they tend to really take advantage of them. It's not like they don't take advantage of middle class or educated people. It's just that they take advantage of the poor and uneducated, and many of the poor and uneducated, they really don't know what to do when the police stop them, because they're so accustomed to being beat, abused and misused. They're so accustomed to that. So they're afraid. They say the wrong things many times. And we've seen on television how they, you know, actually get out the car and then throw you on top of the car. I mean, throw your head on the on the front of the car, or on the car, or throw you down, wrestle you. It's just it has to come to a halt. And I think what we're saying is that they shouldn't be treating us any different from white folks or any other anybody else. They don't treat anybody. They don't treat other nationalities like that. It's just us for the most part. And so when they arrested that white woman the other day, I mean, that was just whoever did that, the police officer or whatever he was. I mean, that was just stupidity. That was just stupidity. I mean, clearly he was wrong, and the whole world saw it. And so that man should have been fired on the spot. So I think he's doing some kind of death duty. But they're going to make an example of him. He's going to either be fired, he's going to be sued, he's going to be embarrassed, he's going to have to apologize. But they don't do that to us. And so we're going to have to change that. And by any means necessary, that's going to have to change. Are they going to continue to demolish us and do all the things that they've been doing? But these young people, they're saying enough is enough. And young people have gotten to the point where they're going to die for the cause. And so it has to be something done, because we don't do it. If we don't do anything about it, and we are, you know, most of us, for the most part, we're afraid. We're afraid of the police, but we shouldn't be. Just like I say, I've lived in communities where white folks were not, they're never afraid of the police. But they see the police as officer friendly. We, in particular in the poor communities, they see it as dangerous. They're paying tax dollars. You're not supposed to be afraid of police officers like that. But we are, because they've instilled so much fear in us over the years. I mean, long years. As a child, I used to stay by my grandmother's house on weekends and on Friday nights and Saturday nights, look out the window, and they're just beating black men. And they're still doing it. They're still getting away with it. But we have to do something about it. And I know it's going to have to be laws changed and have some folks put in jail. But right now, what's happening now is that they're being exposed. Look at what they did to Rodney King. Look what they did to Rodney. We all saw that. And you still have a jury to say that the police did what they were supposed to. They beat that man like a Hebrew slave. And the jury who we're afraid to get involved with the criminal system or the judicial system. We're afraid because, you know, we think they're going to do us something because we said the wrong thing or we protected this or whatever needed to be done. So something has to change. And these young people are not taking it. They're not going to lay down and be abused and misused because they were black and just say, okay, well, let me shut my mouth up for 15 minutes. And I do tell my sons, listen, when the police stop you, put your hands where they can see you, because it's better for you to come out alive than for me to be, get a call that you're dead. But we don't have, we shouldn't be living like that. White folks don't live like that. We shouldn't be living, and we have to get to the point where we understand those people are no better than us. They make us think that, but they're no better than us. And so why are they going to treat white folks a certain way and treat the African-American community another way and just beat us, things we've never seen, but we're going to see. We're starting to see more and more and more. And like you talk about that chokehold, the military chokehold, when they killed that brother Gardner. What if I put a military chokehold on one of them? But anyway.
Well, let me go back to Andre. Andre, you and I know that policy is the strongest way of getting justice. Normally, when somebody breaks policy, they don't have a leg to stand on. But here, we've seen where cities can have policies and police officers can violate those policies, and they still don't get justice. Now, how is it can a city say that a chokehold should not be used, and then when a man clearly uses it, he gets a pass?
James, that's nothing new. We have policies in place, but I mean, how they are applied depends on who's in the authoritative position. So, I mean, this is nothing new. We would think that
policy should be upheld. But, you know, people play games and stuff, and you have favors that you have and all that kind of stuff. So that's nothing new. I'm not quite sure what the question is, but this is nothing new to us. And that's the reason why we're
– can't count on them when they outlaw something for it to truly be outlawed, then you know it just lets you know we right back in Mississippi where jurors would go into a room and not be willing to convict a white man. So now we're saying, okay, well, now we'll get white men will get convicted, but police officers won't.
Okay, so, okay, go back to that same scenario that you had. It wasn't because the law didn't say that the person was had not committed a crime, but based on that jury and the culture, they identified, you know, this was an exception, and they found the person not guilty. I mean, as many people have been killed, black have been killed within the last few years, and it's surely not on the books that, you know, it's unlawful to kill an unarmed person, or it's unlawful to kill a person walking in the neighborhood and only have a soda pop and you weren't threatened, but yet you can use the rule to say that, you know, you fear for your life. You know, again, James, I appreciate the law. I try to abide by the law, and I try not to get into the system. I was words of advice that the best way to beat the system is to stay out the system. But those of us who do put themselves in the system, then use it, come out, learn from it, and help others not to. But, again, we're all saying that laws are the laws, but we're about living. And we have to anticipate how do we capitalize on the law and turn it for our good, because what we've been doing haven't been working. And I think Dee brought up a fantastic point, because we know everything always repeats itself. And until we as a black race understand the value that we have and who we are, and we unite ourselves, we're going to keep seeing repeat of what we're experiencing. And let me tell you, born and raised in Mississippi, I've been around enough. You guys are just not getting exposed to it, and Mr. Tillis is correct. We're tipping the iceberg, as they say. There's more to come.
Joyce, then we need to truly galvanize ourselves. If the only way to change the policy is in the inside, then people of color are going to have to come together in order to dictate the change, because there's just so many, you know, we have to take advantage of the fact that they say the people of color at some point are going to become the majority, because we can't just allow these people to continue to abuse us if we're not going to fight back.
You're correct about that. We have to start on the inside. We don't have no help on the inside. There's no black judges. There's no black lawyers. There's no black laws. You got all the people that making the laws and the rules that you want to follow and that we should be following and the laws that everybody should be following. They're not made up by people of diverse races. They're only about the white man who made up their laws. And they changes the law to fit their needs. So we're going to need our young people to step up in areas of doctors, lawyers, judges, and our Supreme Court. When you go to the Supreme Court, you look on that wall and you see, is there anyone who can relate to you? Not here in Arizona. Our Supreme Court is made up of nothing but white. One female white, and the rest of them are white men. And now you tell a person of color to try to go through that system to get justice, it's not going to happen. This is on all levels. So that's what we need to do. Yes, we do need to work from the inside in order for us to do that. And we better be grateful that we have some good white folks who is willing to make a stand for us to get some of the places where we are today. So we need to work on the inside. But in order for us to get on the inside, we're going to need to
get our young people to go for and reach for those type of positions. And not just politicians. We need it better than the politicians, because sometimes when we get up there in within our politicians, you know, we kind of change. So that's how come we need people on our lower levels. We need a lot of police chiefs that are black. We need judges that are black. We need Supreme Court, federal court. We need all these people of diverse color to represent. So when we go forth with our issue, someone can relate. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take another break, and we're going to come back and continue our conversation.
Woman that has sent the expectations of the world to take my rightful place among the stars. The woman that does not use the traditional roadmaps to a given place, but create my own destination. I am this woman that maintain her intrinsic beauty in ways not determined by others' thoughts, but by my own sense of uniqueness, my own desire of sexiness and allure. I am this woman designed by my creator to scale the height of the unbounded, allowing my talents to be seen by the masses while inspiring those yet to dream to greatness. I am the mother of the world, deserving the respect of all that walk under the gravity of the earth, igniting the love that exists in all men while being the birthplace of the future.
I am this woman. I am this woman that ascends the expectation of the world to take my rightful place among the stars. The woman who does not use the traditional roadmaps to a given place, but creates my own destination.
I am this woman that maintains her intrinsic beauty in ways not determined by others' thoughts, but by my own sense of uniqueness, my own desire of sexiness and allure.
I am this woman designed by my creator to scale the height of the unbounded, allowing my talents to be seen by the masses while inspiring those to dream.
I am the woman of the world, deserving the respect of all that walk under the gravity of the earth.
Igniting the love that exists in all men, while being the birthplace of the future.
I am this woman.
Are you prepared to shake away your fear of being rich and successful? You must discover ways to accumulate wealth without adding more work to your day. The Wealth Dad system adds more value to your hours by creating an opportunity to multiply your efforts. Visit WealthDadSystem.com. If you want more information, call 407-459-4827. This is an opportunity to change your quality of life and increase your monthly cash flow. Tyrone, where do we go from here? How do we assert ourselves in a way that allow us to make change without having too many casualties?
I really don't know. I really don't know. You said the key word, without many casualties. Maybe casualty is what we're going to have. I heard something a couple of weeks ago from, who was it? It was from the evangelical. His name is Baker. What's the preacher Baker? Jim Baker. Yeah, he said that if Donald Trump get impeached, it's going to be a revolution. I think it's going to eventually come to that point because we are sick of it. We're tired of it, and it has to stop. We got a clown, a fool in the office. It really makes us look bad. The things that this man is doing, he's taking us backwards. The world is laughing at us. And how could you even put somebody like that in position? You got 51% of white women, and probably most and almost 100% white men, who voted for Trump. They knew this guy was a nut. Then you had 13% of African Americans who voted for this nut. They knew he was a nut, but he sold them on the opportunity of we're gonna make America great again. We're gonna bring the good old times back. And that was cold words. I don't know. I don't know what we're gonna do, but I know there's gonna be a revolution. There's changing. Things are changing. A change is coming. It has to be. Because enough is enough. We're tired of being pounced on. We're tired of being misused and taken advantage of. We're tired of that. And so I don't know what it's going to take, but there is a change coming. And like I said, people are being exposed every day. Whatever you do in this world, it's going to come back on you. And so the things that the police officers did, there were some police officers and judges, whatever, in the state of Alabama, who we just discovered about a year or two ago, put over 1,000 black men in jail. They were planting drugs, guns, and whatever else they were doing to to them. They put over 1,000 black men in jail, convicted them. They were exposed just recently. About a year ago, they were exposed. And so there's going to be all kind of exposure. Just like this white police officer who stopped this white woman that particular night, he didn't know he was being hurt. They tried to make it look like he was just joking. He was not joking. He said, "We don't kill white folks. We kill black people. We kill black people." And we should have been up in arms about that. We should be up in arms. We kill black people. So I don't care how much education, I don't care how much money you got, your life is at risk every day. And then some of us, we love white folks so much. We think that because white folks are our friends, we think there's a whole bunch of good white folks. Listen, I don't believe there are a whole lot of good white people. I don't believe there's a good police officer. I think there are many more bad than good, because you will be surprised at the conversations that they have when they get together. They laugh in your face. Just like somebody mentioned about, they say, "Well, you're not like them." They tried that stuff with me when I was working with these major corporations. But what that is that's just, they're just pitting you against each other. They're saying you are better than your people. You're no better than your people. It's only by the grace of God that you were able to, that you were born into a certain family, that you were able to get your education. It's not that most of these people don't want to get their education, but if you were born in the condition a lot of these people were born in, you wouldn't even have a chance of getting out of those kind of communities. So don't think that we all that and we made it and we got this going on and all that other stuff like a lot of us do. But it's not about that. It's just the grace of good Lord that you had an opportunity to get your education and get out of those kind of communities. How often do we go back into those communities? Most cases not. But we look at those people through the eyes of white folks and say, they are this and they are that and this and all that. But you don't know the condition. I know. I grew up there. So I know. Most of them don't have an education. They got, the white man put drugs. He put guns and everything else into our communities for us to kill each other. They infiltrate us with FBIs. They got us using all kind of medicine. They serve us the worst kind of food, killing us. I was reading something today how white doctors, not only white doctors, but black doctors too, because I've been around where I've heard black doctors bragging about on operations that people didn't need, but these white folks are giving us all kinds of operations. Listen, a doctor can say you have cancer and you don't have cancer. He can say you need a hysterectomy and you don't need that. But how do you know? How do you know? You're not educated. You don't have any money. You don't have any representation. So, and I apologize if I sound like I'm angry, because I am when these kind of things come up, because to see the injustice, it's really sad. And we're not free. I don't care how much money you think you make, or you got $1 million in the bank, or you got so much education, you got doctor this and doctor that, you are still not free. You still a black man or woman in a white man's world. And we got to change that. And that may mean shedding blood. Because I truly believe there's gonna be a revolution, because there are tons of racist white folks. How could 51% of white people, of white women, vote for a man like Trump? Do you know why they was voting for him? Because he wanted to put the black man back in check. He wanted to put him back into his place. That's why your friends that you laugh and joke with, and I'm not talking about us on necessarily on this call, I'm just saying the kind of stuff that we take for granted. How often do we go back into the community? And either how often do we give back to try to help these children or adults become educated? Anyway, that's it.
All right, Joyce, I'm going to give you the final word. We're really at the end of the show. What is your...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I mean, you know, that's how it works sometimes. And, you know, I don't want to interrupt you when you're on a roll. So, Joyce, what are your final thoughts this evening?
Well, I just like to commend Mr. Tillis and say, well said. Everything he said is the truth. Sometimes there are going to be casualties in order for the change for us to get, you know, we had ancestors to give up plenty casualties for where we are
and we still have not made it. So therefore, our young people are much stronger than where we were when we were coming up and our ancestors, and they are willing to step it up and step out there to make things right. So we just have to get behind them, support all these positive calls and go forward, because believe me, it is out there. It is happening. It is happening now. Now it might take the dreamers to go a step ahead of it, because they are definitely serious about it. It's going to be something major is going to be happening right now in front of us. Way we see our world, it's going to be a totally different scenario going forward. Thank you.
Because you know, you always seem to bring up the right thing at the right time, and we're going to have to talk about that, because I just don't believe those people are going to go away silently. Now, how are you going to send people to a country they don't know nothing about? They don't have no connection with whatsoever. These dreamers have been educated here. They've lived here. It's the only country they know. And you're going to talk about sending, deporting them back? I believe that it's truly going to be a revolution. And if they don't try to figure out a way to reach some common ground with these immigrants, we're gonna see something awful. And our economy can't afford them to go back anyway, because we employ too many of them in jobs that other Americans are not going to go do. So I'm not sure how they think they're gonna get these vegetables picked, these fruits picked, and all these other jobs that these immigrants do, if they're going to try to send them back. I just don't see it. Well, we'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, where we let our voices be heard loud and clear. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow. In America, you can put your faith with your will to work and create magic. The Wealth Dad System is a great opportunity to use your faith and your will to dream to build a new source of cash flow. Are you ready to change your quality of life and increase your monthly cash flow? If you are, go to WealthDadSystems.com. For more information, call 407-459-4827. This system will change your life.
Everybody stand up on your feet and make some noise for one of the most phenomenal female groups of our time. Jackie, Dorinda, Karen, Quickie, the Clark Sisters.
Ms. Audrey, you want to have the last word today?
Well, I just want to remind us that we are more than conquerors. We are blessed. We are talented. We are smart. And this too shall pass. We must not only pray, but we have to also take actions. And again, those actions are, you know, they start within our home and then they spread within our communities. And I, while we were talking, I was thinking about the movie Roots. I think it was Roots. And the lady, the baby was born, and they were just saying, is this the one? Is this the one? You know, that just, that goes to my spirit, because the Lord will raise up a person for his purpose. And like Joy said, we have to make sure that we're supporting our young people and being the very best that they can be, and just make sure that we let everyone know how valuable they are. You know, you'll be surprised how an encouraging word can make the difference of a person taking a step forward or two steps backward. So I would much rather help a person go forward. Thank you, James.
All right. Again, everybody, we will be back on the air tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We are aware that a hurricane is bearing down possibly on Florida, but hopefully we'll be able to remain on the air throughout the week and the weekend. So take care, everybody, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, where your voice can be heard loud and clear.